It's hard to look at the images of the Costa Concordia, the cruise ship wrecked off the coast of Tuscany, and not think of the Titanic. April marks 100 years since that disaster. Thankfully, many fewer are dead and missing this time around, but there are some similarities. The Titanic was the biggest ship built in Britain at that time. The Concordia is the biggest yet in Italy. The Titanic collided with an iceberg. The Concordia struck a reef. One major difference in these stories is the reaction of the captain. Edward Smith's Titanic story has been romanticized through history and on the big screen. He's said to have stayed aboard and died on his ship. The Concordia's captain, Francesco Schettino, faces accusations of manslaughter and charges that he abandoned his post. In an audio recording released today, we hear the ship's captain talking to the Coast Guard from a lifeboat, resisting orders to return to the ship to oversee evacuation. The captain insists that he did return to the ship and was the last to leave. The Coast Guard says no. Ship's captains, what don't we understand about your job? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Bob Jarvis is a professor of maritime law at Nova Southeastern University. He joined us today from a studio in Lauderdale by the Sea in Florida. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And is the captain still really expected to be the last to leave?
Well, you know, the captain's never really been expected to be the last to leave. That is a romantic notion. Now, it is true that many captains will not leave their ship until all hope is lost, but we certainly don't expect captains to commit suicide.
Not commit suicide, but make sure everybody else is off. They are the ones ultimately responsible for this disaster, no?
Well, in this case, that's certainly true. I mean, it from what we know, and I want to stress that we don't want to rush to judgment. The investigators have a lot of work to do. The information that's coming out is coming out in a very piecemeal sort of fashion. And so we're speculating right now. But it certainly seems that this captain did, in fact, cause his own ship's sinking by some very improvident maneuvers.
Allegedly steering close to an island called, I think, Giglio, if I'm not mispronouncing that, so he could show off his beautiful vessel.
Yes, that's right, and also give one of the crew members an opportunity to wave to his family on shore.
And in the meantime, coming obviously much too close to a reef. Anyway, that part will be questioned, and we'll find out more. There are lots of reports that the crew was not sufficiently trained, and isn't that the captain's responsibility?
Well, that's not really the captain's responsibility. That's really the responsibility of the cruise line working in conjunction with the Italian authorities, the Italian Coast Guard, and working also in conjunction with their insurers and their classification society. But if the captain either knew or should have known that his crew was not up to snuff, was not able to handle an emergency should an emergency occur, that's something certainly the captain would be expected to know and would be expected to really lay back to his superiors so that corrective action could be taken.
So are you drawing a distinction between the captain certainly responsible for the navigation of the vessel and those who are taking care of the engines, that sort of thing, but the waiters, the stewards, the people who clean the rooms, that sort of thing, they're the cruise line's responsibility?
Absolutely.
Okay. The captain is also, at least on naval vessels, held responsible for everything that happens on his ship.
Well, there's no question that on a civilian ship like Costa Concordia, the captain is the ultimate authority. His word is really law. He's the one who ultimately has the responsibility. But, I mean, it is a common human condition to want to demonize, to have a name, to have a face, to be able to point to someone. But, I think the one thing that is already very clear from this disaster is that there is lots and lots of blame. A lot of people did a lot of things wrong.
Including, and again, these are anecdotal reports. We don't know
Absolutely.
If they're entirely accurate, but at least some of the passengers, or I guess former passengers, are saying we're supposed to get a safety briefing. In fact, what we got was a pitch for more cruises, and it didn't amount to much at all.
Right. And again, that's going to be the responsibility of the cruise line. That's going to be the responsibility of the Italian Coast Guard. This was an Italian flagged ship. And so a lot of the blame has to lie with government authorities who, working with the cruise line, would determine what kind of drill would be required for a ship of this sort.
The conversation that we were informed of today between the Coast Guard and the captain, he describes himself as being in a lifeboat off the ship at that moment and said to be supervising the evacuation From there, obviously people are highly critical of his actions, but might he have been in exactly the right place?
Hard to say. It's certainly possible. I mean, it was the captain has said that it was dark. The captain, you know, has certainly intimated that there was nothing more that he could do on the ship. You want the captain where he's in the best position to supervise, to organize, to direct. And clearly, I mean, it's his contention that he was where he should be to have the maximum effectiveness.
There is also the Coast Guard official on shore says, you have ordered abandoned ship. That means I'm in charge and I am ordering you to go back aboard. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Once there is an abandoned ship order, the captain gives up his authority, and it was appropriate to give up his authority to the Italian Coast Guard. Once those authorities, and there is an allegation that those authorities did not get on the scene as quickly as they could have because the proper mayday signal was not given, and in fact that originally it was the captain was just describing what was happening on his ship as a problem with his electrical power. But certainly once the captain gives the abandoned ship order, once authorities are on the scene and they've taken control, they are in charge.
We're talking with Bob Jarvis, a professor of maritime law at Nova Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale. We'd like to hear from ship's captains today. What don't we understand about your job? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Greg's joining us on the line from Detroit.
Certainly don't want to demonize the captain. As the other person said, there's a lot of things that you may not be aware of, and that'll take a long time to uncover. My own personal comment, though, is the fact that the actions that I've seen in the captain, I can't find any way of rationalizing those actions. I simply can't. And I think maybe that the captain was simply rattled. I can't think of anything else to, under the circumstances, to abdicate command of being on the vessel when there was need of people, being crew members, to be directed and decisions to be made. Being on a lifeboat trying to direct something, that's the last place that captain should have been, in my opinion.
Greg, do you speak from experience?
Well, yeah, not on a ship of that size, no, but the concept of the responsibility of a captain has not only been carried forward in hundreds and hundreds of years of maritime law, but all pilots, federal aviation regulations are based on maritime law, and there's part of FAR 91 that states that the pilot in command, in this case the captain, is responsible for everything that happens and fully accountable for everything that happens, which means everything has to be directed by the captain, and it's a mystery to me, the source of his actions.
And you are, just to clarify, a ship's captain?
No, not a ship's captain in terms of a liner, charter boats in the Great Lakes and the Caribbean and so on, but the principles of being responsible for a vessel, whether you have six paying passengers or 4,000, are absolutely the same.
Bob Jarvis, is he right about that?
Yes, he is right about that. I mean, really, the test is prudent seamanship. And again, we're going to have to wait and see. I mean, I totally agree with Greg that it is a mystery. It's hard to understand or fathom how the captain could have done any of the things that he did. I mean, he, of course, said that he hit a rock that was not on any of his charts. That doesn't explain why he deviated from a course that had been set for him. It is certainly true that the captain is ultimately responsible for everything that happens on the ship, and it is an expectation that the captain will direct if there has to be an emergency evacuation. But again, was he in the right place when he was doing that evacuation? There's so much that we have to wait until the investigators can get in and really, you know, tell us what happened.
Greg, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And I just wanted Bob Jarvis to go back a little bit in time. A lot of our regulations and traditions are come to us from the Royal Navy and their practice with commercial vessels as well. I've read that, in fact, in the old days in the Royal Navy, and I believe in the American Navy as well, any captain who lost a vessel for whatever reason was court-martialed, and you had to go before a panel of fellow officers and explain it. It didn't mean you were punished, but you were court-martialed.
Yes, you were expected in the king's navy. You were expected not to lose the king's ship. And if you lost the king's ship, you definitely were going to face a court-martial where, as you just said, you were expected to explain yourself. Now, if you could explain yourself, if, for example, there was an act of God or, you know, you were thrown off course by weather, there was a mutiny by your crew, there were pirates who assailed your ship. I mean, there were lots of reasons why you might lose one of the king's ships, but it was a very big deal, and it's still a very big deal.
Let's see if we go next to Scott, and Scott's with us from Milwaukee.
Hi, yes. Well, like the previous caller, I was a captain of a small commercial fishing vessel on the Great Lakes. I was preached by my forebears that I was ultimately responsible for not only the boat and the gear, but absolutely the lives of everyone on board, which is, in my case, only two crew. I would also like to add, as the previous caller has, that maritime law is pretty darn strong, going back several hundred years, and, you know, it seems to me there might even be a providence or a permission in there to have this captain sentence be keel hauling.
Keel hauling. I suspect.
I think your guest knows what that is.
I think we all know what it is, but the European Union rules, I suspect, would not permit it. But Bob Jarvis, perhaps drawn and quartered instead.
Well, and we don't do that anymore. Of course, he's going to lose his license. I mean, I think that's a foregone conclusion. The Italian authorities will decide whether or not to go forward with criminal prosecution. He could certainly be accused of manslaughter. He certainly will face a civil lawsuit. So lots of bad things are going to happen, but he's not going to be keel-hauled.
We're talking about the responsibilities of captains with Bob Jarvis, a professor of maritime law at Nova Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Brett, and Brett with us from Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm just curious. I'm a captain for a major U.S. international airline, and we have a thing that's been around since the late 70s called crew resource management, and it's responsible by and large for the elimination of a lot of human error that has caused accidents in the past in the aviation industry. And I'm wondering if they have something, they teach similar concepts to that in the maritime industry. I'm not familiar with what the training is, but seems to me that if other crew members had been taught to speak up against things that they see as being unsafe to the captain, even though the captain has ultimate authority and responsibility, this kind of accident might have been prevented.
Bob Jarvis?
Yes, actually, maritime law has the same sort of thing. It's called the STCW. It's the Seafarers Training, Certification, and Watchkeeping. Among other things, seafarers are taught that they are supposed to go up the chain of command. They report to whoever their department head is, and then they can escalate that up all the way to the captain. And even the lowliest crew member, if they really see something that's wrong, they are expected, if the captain is not taking appropriate action, to contact the home office.
Now, in that industry, is it still, even though they teach that, like, they've had a problem in the aviation industry for a long time with the captain still being the captain, people were afraid to question him until this really got ingrained into the culture, the safety culture of the airlines. Is that still a problem within the maritime industry?
Yes, it is, because, of course, especially on cruise ships, the crew members, there's a big disparity between officers and the rest of the crew. The captain is still considered to be God, and it would really take a very brave seaman to buck the captain and to go to the home office. So, yes, that's absolutely a problem.
That's interesting. I would think that given the seriousness of this accident, maybe it might be like we had in aviation in 1978 when a United Airlines jet crashed because it simply ran out of fuel outside of Portland, and it resulted in a big change in the safety culture of the airlines. I'm hoping that something like that might happen within the maritime industry, given the fact.
Let's hope so, Brett. Thanks very much for the call. And Bob Jarvis, earlier we drew a comparison to the Titanic. Obviously, the scale of this disaster, much smaller, and obviously we hope that those still missing are found safe. But you say there is a comparison to be drawn to the Exxon Valdez as well.
Sure, because in the Exxon Valdez, of course, there, once again, you had a captain who was negligent and who the did not properly carry out his duties, and that led to that terrible tragedy. And there are a lot of parallels between that tragedy and this tragedy.
Including the pillorying, I guess, of the captain.
Yes, Captain Hazelwood was very quickly set adrift by his employers, who tried to put all the blame on him. Of course, Exxon was not ultimately successful in doing that, because even if Captain Hazelwood was a drunk, as you know, was alleged, even if he left the bridge, even if he did all these things that were terrible, who hired him, who trained him, who oversaw him, who kept putting him back in charge of a huge supertanker? And so Koster is already doing the same thing. I mean, they're excoriating their captain, and yet at the end of the day, they hired him, they trained him, and they kept letting him sail.
Here's an email from Jack. As a skipper, one's first responsibility is the safety of the crew and passengers. That being said, the construction of these megalithic cruise ships from which an orderly evacuation is impossible is wrong. Once again, the dollar trumps the individual. And again, 4,000 passengers aboard. I'm rounding off the numbers because it's a lot more profitable to have a lot more passengers.
Yeah, although, you know, these ships are really designed. I mean, there are lots and lots of muster stations. There are lots of ways to get off the ship. After Titanic, we have certainly made sure that all ships have enough lifeboats. I mean, this was a human failure. This was not a construction failure. You could easily have gotten, not easily, but I mean, you could have gotten those 4,000 people safely off the ship if the captain had sounded the alarm early, if he had sent out the Mayday signal when he should have, if the crew understood what was happening, if the crew had been properly trained, and this is the biggest thing, of course, that they didn't have a common language. The crew could not communicate with the passengers, and as a result, the passengers panicked and then stampeded.
Bob Jarvis, thanks very much for your time today.
Oh, thank you.
Bob Jarvis, professor of maritime law at Nova Southeastern University, former editor of the Journal of Maritime Law and Commerce, with us today from Lauderdale by the Sea. I'm going to be off for the rest of this week. John Donvan will be here with a conversation about love and autism tomorrow. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.